The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks. Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day! And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Friday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague, the Professor Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how to tell the difference between steam and fog in evaluating market moves, how a sessions player has one band in the NBA playing better tunes, and yes, there is a way that you can study before taking the eye test.
So, let's study before taking the eye test, Dave. First take on a Friday. Really entertaining night of college basketball last night, at least if you like defense and poor shooting. But some fun games, no doubt. What'd you see that you want to share with our viewing audience?
How about an eye test that failed, and we failed it? When we had the play of the day yesterday, a lot of that was anti-Portland. A lot of it for all the right reasons. But that little gamble in there, you know, in the show we talked about how Memphis had not stepped up when Zach Randolph came back, that actually had been playing a little bit worse. Well, now it's four games back. 1-3 straight up. The only win over the Wizards, 0-4 against the spread, nothing all that close to a spread cover in those four games. Now, when Randolph came to Memphis, you know, he brought a lot of baggage with him. But from day one, he had been a solid citizen, largely because from day one, there were other new pieces fitting into play around him that hadn't played without Randolph before. Well, now, here's a case where a team just had a nice window to play without him, played good basketball. When he comes back, they fall off a little bit. The ball doesn't move as well. The intensity level on defense isn't as good. Could this be yet one more time in which Randolph becomes a bit of a clubhouse issue with the team? We took a gamble on it. We lost. We're going to be real careful before we make our next Memphis bet. I know you didn't enjoy watching that.
No.
But you probably did enjoy watching the colleges.
Yeah, I mean, it was just fun. I mean, that Syracuse Wisconsin game that I didn't have a dime on. That was maybe the best game of the tournament from an entertainment perspective. And obviously, the clients and I were able to cash a ticket with the Florida Gators. But my first take last night, Friday, remember the little brackets we put out a couple of weeks ago? And they were posted in the covers.com posting form. Dave and I talked about our picks on the show. Malinsky over here, you know, what's he got, one Final Four team left?
Well, maybe none after tonight.
Yeah, we'll see. But my little bracket. And again, brackets, there's an enormous amount of luck involved. But the bracket I posted at covers.com, I also posted it in the free contest at ESPN. Just checked to see what was up last night. 99.9th percentile. I rank about 5,000 in the world out of well over 6 million entries. So I hope at least some of you use that for your own brackets or help you with your own brackets. And for that particular bracket, the Final Four, I got Kansas. Kansas, Kentucky, Ohio State, and Louisville in my Final Four. So we'll see how well it stays alive. But for me, again, I haven't won a whole lot of bracket contests in recent years. That's not the focus. The focus is on point spread winners. But it's kind of fun to have a bracket that's working. So that was good. 12 teams left in the NCAA field. Four more teams are going to finish their season tonight. And we're going to cover both of Saturday's Elite Eight matchups on today's show. But first, a quick follow-up to what we talked about yesterday when breaking down the North Carolina-Ohio U matchup. Kendall Marshall did not practice for the Tar Heels yesterday. It looks more and more unlikely that he's going to play tonight. He may not be able to go should the Tar Heels advance against the Bobcats this evening and play again on Sunday. So Marshall, maybe in the Final Four? We don't know. Doesn't look like he's going to go this evening. Now, let's go to the mail and set up perhaps one of the most key handicapping topics, one that does not show in the box scores, and one that so many of you have sent in interesting and good letters, good emails about. But we picked this one from T-Bolin, and it was a real good email. T-Bolin asked, "Hey guys, great show. I've never missed a show since I noticed you guys are running the show in February. Thanks, T-Bolin. On the Tuesday show, you mentioned some sharp money manipulated the UMass at Drexel line from the opening of 6.5 to 8. According to my notes," and yes, I actually take notes from your show, "during the show aired on March 13th, you also mentioned some sharp money was pushing the total lines up for several points in those NIT/CIT/CBI games. My question is, what action do you usually take on those lines which have been rapidly manipulated by the sharp money? Do you execute option one, go with the flow of the sharp money, i.e. take Drexel laying points or took over the posted total on the NIT/CIT/CBI games? Option two, going with what makes sense according to your own analysis. Option three, staying away from those games with the lines rapidly manipulated by the sharp money." Good question, T-Bolin. And Dave and I, let's discuss this because there's a lot of issues that he brought up.
Yeah, we hope that we don't make these processes too convoluted over time or make them a little bit too intimidating. But if you want to win, the first thing you have to do is not lose. And that's a big part of what we try to do on this show, is establish those basic little fundamentals. Blocking and tackling, passing to the open man, taking good shots. Do the little things so that you don't lose. Well, part of what we all have to do every day is examine data, especially when it comes down to something like point spread records, which is so crucial and we see referred to so often. Now, here's part of the problem, though. For most people, point spread records are considered to be the performance of the team or the performance of the odds makers, one or the other. There's a whole third element in there. The market itself and a constantly shifting market in a lot of ways. Now, go back to the Oregon-Washington game we talked about earlier in this week. But Oregon had this great run as a Pac-12 road dog, and then we showed how the line, though, had been adjusted down because of that. Markets do adjust, but markets also manipulate and control. And this is one of these gray areas that gets out there. We thought we smelled it when we were on the air talking about Massachusetts Drexel on Tuesday. Game opened 6.5, looks about the right place for that game to be. Boom, you look up and it's 8. Are those people that wanted Drexel, or were those people that were trying to create an 8 so they could bet Massachusetts later in the day? Well, what happens later in the day? The 8s disappear, as we kind of thought that they would. So to put it in a simple terms, let's say that someone decides, we want this game plus 8 for a lot tonight. We can bet 10,000 at 6.5 and 7 that'll get it to 8, and we can come back and bet 50 plus the 8. That goes on a lot more than you might think. So part of the problem, as you evaluate data each day, there's that whole third wall out there that must be a part of your thought process.
Yeah, there's so much talk about sharp money, and especially out in the hinterlands. You know, I used to live in Michigan, and people are, who do the wise guys like? Who do the sharps like? When we talk about sharp money and wise guy money, what are they looking for? 55% winners is a goal for any professional bettor. They're not looking to hit 9 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 or 7 out of 10. They're looking to grind out a profit over time, winning 11 out of 20. In poker, you got ace-king versus pocket queens, your classic coin flip, as they call it in poker. That's a 55-45. We call it a coin flip. In sports betting, that's an edge. So when we talk about, and Dave just brought up a great example, it takes much less money to manipulate an opening line, an early line, than it does to move the line later in the day. So if you can take a 52, 53, 54% game, manipulate the number in an effort to give yourself an extra point or point and a half or 2 points, guess what? You've turned a 52, 53, 54% into a 56, 57, 58% opportunity. Those points matter. Those points add up. And again, little edges over time are what many sharp bettors are looking for. So when you see the wise guys, I'm never afraid to step in front of the sharp money. I'm not. There's no reason to be. What you see them doing with this hand is not necessarily what they're doing with this hand. You know, you'll often see moves in one direction, they're setting something up to move right back the other way. That happens on a daily basis, sides, totals, across sports. Don't be afraid of the sharp money, particularly when we're talking about some of the more public games. Now, it's one thing if you're talking about a minor Sun Belt game or something. You say, oh, wow, you know, that number moved. Maybe somebody knows something. But if you're talking about a Big East game or an NCAA tournament game or an NIT game or any game that's on TV, no, it's not something that I would be overly concerned about.
How are you going to know when that manipulation is taking place? You probably won't, because a lot of times we ourselves don't. But we know that it's out there. We've got a game on the board tonight that would be a good example of that. If you saw the early money on Indiana-Kentucky on the total, drifting up, drifting up, drifting up. Finally, a couple of the good stores get as high as 147. What happens once the 47s are in enough places on the screen? Gone, bash, boom. Not only 47, 46.5, 46, 45.5, 45, all crash down. Again, a similar way, market machination. Somebody who wants the under knows how they can cheaply get it to that peak point. Because keep in mind, they're not just buying the added value. They're buying the positions up to the value. Drexel UMass is a good example. You lay 6.5 and 7. You take 8. Look at your windows of opportunity. Obviously, if the game falls 7, that's real good all the way around because you've won the 6.5 and the 8. But even if it falls 8, you haven't lost any of your Massachusetts bet. You've won all of the Drexel that you used to set it up. So it's not just buying the points themselves, it's buying the positioning along the way. The biggest problem, though, comes with that tracking. That's why we always say take all these point spread results with a grain of salt. When you see a point spread trend, you want to know, what does it mean? Is this team playing well in this situation? Is this team just playing average in the situation, but the markets miss it very badly? Or were there some games where the point spread itself got twisted and turned? So when we chart a game like Drexel UMass, we're real careful as to what number we put in the book as the real charting number. 6.5 goes up to 8, closes at 7.5. No, we put 6.5 in because there was much more money bet from the 8 down than from the 6.5 up. You'll see 7.5 online in most databases as the closing line in that game. No, that's not really what the market perceptions were in that one. We'll still have the 6.5. So we'll try to help you with this on a daily basis, but you have to know that that is a part of what goes on every day.
And the other thing to remember here is that for all the money that gets bet in Las Vegas, for all the money that gets bet in the hundreds and thousands of offshore books in the Caribbean and around the world, there's even more or just as much money bet with local bookies around the country. And you know, and when we talk about for the average bettor, there's much more money bet with the local bookies. But even for the betting syndicates, the wise guys, the sharps, they're making a lot of their bets with local guys. And stuff that's not on the screen, not on the Sports Options Live Odds screen or the DonBest screen or any of the screens that you're going to see. And when you talk about how many shops are open in terms of overnight numbers, you know, it's very easy to manipulate an overnight number. You can move an overnight number with a nickel bet. You know, you can. without much difficulty, or a dime, or a couple of dimes. And you move it at these leading indicator shops, and the next morning a couple of more stores open, you know, real early, you pop them again, and then everybody's open, both the stores on the screen, the shops here in Las Vegas, and the local bookies around the country, and boom, that's where you see the money come in the other way. So it's not just about what you're seeing, also the stuff that you're not necessarily seeing. But there's also one thing that I want to talk here. You gave up three options. You know, you said, what do you do when you see this sharp money move? You say, do you go with the flow of the sharp money? Do you want to follow it? Do you go with what makes sense according to your own analysis, or do you just stay away from those games completely? And the answer to me there is perfectly clear. No debate. Option two, go with what makes sense according to your own analysis. And there are bets that you may not be willing to make until the market gets manipulated. You know, the clients and I had a play on UMass the other night, plus the points. At 6.5, not sure I would have pulled the trigger. At 7.5, 8, I was all ears. Give me UMass plus the points. So you can take the line moves and use them to your advantage as opposed to being scared off by them. Wouldn't you say, Dave?
I'd say the single most important part, too. Number one, do you follow that move? Keep in mind, when we talk about the wise guys wanting to win 55%, that's 55% at the bet that they make. So if they think, oh, they're laying Drexel minus 6.5, okay, I've got 7.5 here, I want to follow what they did. Now, you can only follow it if you can lay the 6.5. If 1 point is gone from the price they played at, even if that is their genuine side, a point later, you have nothing. If they're 55% at 6.5 and you're laying 7.5, your expectancy isn't going to get you in the money long term. So anytime you've got an opportunity to follow what you think is steam, but you're not getting the same number that the steam went out at, you just don't do it. That will break you.
Yeah. Great question, Tiberlin. Hope we've answered, really brought up an interesting discussion between you and I, Dave. I kind of enjoyed that. But please keep those emails coming in. Of course, the address, sportsday@covers.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at Vegas Sports Day. And you can get involved in the community with active threads and discussions going right now. Make your voice heard. Covers.com/posting.
Up next, the Celtics have to be gassed when they get to Philadelphia, right? Maybe not. Money Time begins.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front-row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey for Pub Crawl. It's funny because David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, Covers covers the numbers. Let's start tonight in Philadelphia, where the 76ers, 6.5-point favorites over the Boston Celtics. And remember what happened the last time Boston traveled to Philly, about maybe the ugliest game of the year. And the Sixers have had a couple ugly, or the Celtics, I should say, have had a couple of ugly games this year. I think this one might have been the ugliest. They played in overtime the previous night versus Houston. They also played overtime 2 days earlier versus the Knicks, and it was a no-show. They were down by 16 after one, down by 24 at halftime. They trailed by 37 in that ballgame, ended up losing up about 103-71. No Boston starter played more than 28 minutes of that ballgame. And Doc Rivers, yeah, he was out waving the white flag pretty early in that one. The question for tonight, is this setting just as bad for the Celtics? Not an easy setting for Boston. This is their eighth straight road game, the longest road trip the Celtics have had in years. They've been on the road for 2 weeks, 13 days they've been on the road. They played in every time zone, three straight court changes on the highway, obviously, second night of back-to-backs for Boston. They played last night. So is this a situation where the scheduling spot is so bad for the Celtics, or is the spot where their pride comes into play? Because guess what? This game is for first place in the Atlantic Division, and Boston, with that opportunity, makes a whole lot of difference if you get home court edge in the first round, especially for a team like the Celtics. May well be a circle game for Boston.
Yeah, keep in mind the way the playoffs are structured. The fact that you're not very good but sneak out of your division, you actually get a little bit of a bonus for that. Okay, so two teams are almost dead even in the standings. Look at difficulty of schedule, almost dead even there. And you see a 6.5. It's what happens when they adjust four market perceptions of the scheduling dynamics. Teddy just told you about that Boston sequence. Sounds awful, doesn't it? But they adjust for it. Now, all day long, you're going to talk to people, say, look at this Celtic setting. We should bet against them here. Now, the oddsmakers have already done that. A game that would be 4 if both were fresh, maybe even 3.5 if both were fresh out there. Now push the 6.5. And the question we have is the setting all that bad, really, for the Celtics? Keep in mind, there's the chip on their shoulder from that horrible loss at Philadelphia the first time around. But as bad as the long, extended road trip sounds, they were off Tuesday and Wednesday. Last night, the minutes were very manageable in Milwaukee. Brandon Bass, the only player that went 35 minutes. And let's talk about the pride of this team. Let's let Paul Pierce set it up for us as to what we might be able to see from them. that this is a mentally strong group. We understand it's been a long trip. You know, you've got tired legs. You get tired mentally. But this is a group that wants to get that next win to make it a great trip. Yeah, having had Tuesday and Wednesday off and not being extended that far last night might open a little of window of opportunity here, because you already know by now what we think about the 76ers in this type of game.
Oh, exactly. I mean, if Boston brings the energy level tonight, we can put these numbers we've been using repeatedly, or even this week, cash a couple of tickets with these numbers in play once again. Philadelphia, against teams that would be in the playoffs this year, 8-16 straight up, 7-17 against the spread. You look at Sixers versus the lottery teams right now, 18-5 straight up, 17-5-1 ATS. So again, 7-17 against the spread versus winning teams, 17-5 ATS against losing teams. That's a sharp disparity as you're going to find. It's created problems all years for the betting markets when they look at a full season power rating for Philly. And it's the type of thing that we've been able to cash in repeatedly on this show, because it's not often that you're going to take plus 6.5 with what may well be equal or better teams in the NBA. You just don't see that situation come around every single day.
Let's go out to the Staples Center in Los Angeles. The Lakers right now a 9-point favorite over the Trailblazers. Yeah, we lost money bucking the Trailblazers last night. We believe it might have been more of a statement about Memphis than about the Blazers. Portland didn't do a lot of things right, but a couple of wild card elements played awfully well for them. They had their perimeter shots. Nicholas Batum, Wesley Matthews, they combined to knock down 8 triples. They scored 42 points. Portland also 25 for 25 at the free throw line. Usually, if you shoot that well from the perimeter, make all your free throws, you should have an easy win. Now, as sloppy as Memphis was, that's a one-possession game in the final minute. So that Portland team may be just as vulnerable tonight as we thought they were last night. Question is, do we want to be laying points with the Lakers, a team that has struggled in several different aspects of point guard play? But you know what? The timing might be changing. Ramon Sessions not only has made a difference on the court in terms of numbers, but we're sensing a psychological difference in the entire game flow of the team as well.
Well, look at what Ramon Sessions did against Dallas the other night. 17 points, 5 rebounds, and what do you have, 8 assists in that ballgame? And coming off the bench, the most important stat of the night may not have been his. It might have been Kobe breaking out of a shooting slump. Finally, 30 points on 11 of 18 from the floor. Excuse me. And there's absolutely a correlation. Kobe likes the new guy.
Yeah, let's take a look at what Kobe had to say after that game. Said his, of course referring to Sessions, his savvy's really the most impressive thing. A lot of players have speed, but he understands how to change directions. He sees the floor extremely well. Before, I had to score and play make for others as well. I don't have to do that. It didn't take long for Kobe to find that rhythm against Dallas and be able to knock those shots down. So now he gets a little window of opportunity. Okay, the Lakers have enthusiasm. They get a day off yesterday. The last game they played on this court, it was a loss to Utah. Lakers only lost 3 home games all year. How did they do after the first two? They came back and won and covered both times in their next home appearance. So let's look for that energy to be there tonight. We love some of these matchups. You take the Laker front court against the current Portland front court. It's one of the bigger mismatches you'll have in the NBA. So with that energy there, with that little chip on their shoulder from having failed against Utah last weekend, let's get in play with this. Lakers minus that 9. Yeah, that's good enough for play of the day status. We like the Laker tempo with Session setting the pace a little bit more. We like Kobe knowing that now that he doesn't have to carry the load, he can go to his spot knowing that someone will deliver the ball to him there. But the big thing is not only did the Lakers control it up front, there's almost no fear of foul trouble. You want Andrew Bynum to score. You want Paul Gasol to score. They're not going to get in foul trouble tonight because the Portland front court has no way to attack them.
Lakers minus the 9. That's the Sports Day play of the day. Coming up next, yeah, let's break down these Elite 8 matchups as Money Time continues.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name on my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. I think.
Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Let's go to Saturday's Elite Eight matchups. Here are the numbers that have already been posted for these games. In the East, in Boston, we have Ohio State -3 over Syracuse. In the West, in the Brickfest, that was the America West Arena in Phoenix last night, Florida, 1.5-point favorites over Louisville. Total there, 131. Now, Syracuse, they were very good last night. Wisconsin was nearly perfect. And the fact that Syracuse survived against, you know, I know that Bo Ryan left that game with a timeout in his pocket, still baffled why he didn't use that timeout on the last possession for Wisconsin, when clearly there were some offensive flow issues that led to a very poor shot selection in the closing seconds. But the bottom line is, Wisconsin was near perfect prior to that. 14 of 27 from beyond the arc. They had 15 assists versus only 6 turnovers. Those are good numbers. Those are the type of numbers that say, hey, we're going to win this game outright. So the fact that Syracuse was able to survive in advance had a lot to do with their own offensive efficiency. And again, Wisconsin, an elite-level defensive team. Well, what did Syracuse do? 27 of 49 from the floor in that ballgame. 5 of 9 from three-point range. Only 5 assists, though, on all of those. 27 made buckets. Only 5 assists on a team that you can't do a lot one-on-one against. Scoop Chardin had 4. Deion Waters had the other. That was it. Ordinarily, it's tough against this Syracuse 2-3 matchup zone with only a single day to prepare, because it is a defense that opponents don't see all the time. That being said, Ohio State saw a bunch of zone last night, and they were able to execute against it in their win over Cincinnati. Boy, Deshaun Thomas, yeah, he's playing pretty good basketball right now. 75 points, 26 rebounds, 5 blocks in 3 tourney games so far.
Yeah, Wisconsin-Syracuse is really a game for the ages when you look at the execution levels. And that's why we're going to talk a lot in today's segment about the eye test. Not the box scores, not just the stats, what actually happened on the court. You only see the Wisconsin shooting numbers. You see that 14 to 27, you want to downgrade that defense. So you know what? They found holes in the zone. No, that was good defense. They made tough shots. That was a terrific, terrific shooting performance by Wisconsin. The other end of the court, Wisconsin played great defense. You know, ordinarily, you know, if Syracuse shoots over 50%, you think it was bad defense. No, the assist count tells you how good the Wisconsin defense was. It was the athleticism of the Syracuse players to make their shots. I wish we had a database where we could look up how often a team loses a game when they have 3 times as many assists as their opponent. That 15-5 count for Wisconsin in that category, you almost never see that happen again. So many dramatic things come into play. But here's what we did see that now comes into play as we move on to tomorrow. Syracuse weakness all year, defensive rebounding. Combination of 2 things. One is, of course, you play a zone defense. You don't hit the defensive boards as well out of that. Also losing Fab Mello a little bit. When we look at the numbers for the full season, how about number 237 in the nation in rebound percentage? And that counts the time with Mello. Where's Ohio State in that category? They're number 6 in rebound margin. Last night, Thomas, who Teddy already talked about, he and Jared Sullinger, 9 offensive rebounds against the Cincinnati zone. And Cincinnati's a better rebounding team than Syracuse is. Is that the one window of opportunity we saw in this matchup out of last night's results? Yeah, here's a toughie for Jim Boeheim, and it allows Todd Matta to also play, almost play hockey a little bit. When we talk about playing hockey, it's a phrase some of the coaches will use. They say, look, we're going to win the offensive boards, so let's dump the puck and go get it. Sometimes you don't mind taking some perimeter shots, knowing that you've got a good chance to go in and get those rebounds. So that's going to be where we start with this game. We think Ohio State wins the boards. Not quite so sure about some of the other matchups. As good as Thomas has been, boy, William Buford, just kind of missing in action. In fact, they've needed Thomas to pick up for him. The last 2 games, Buford 5 for 21, only 2 assists. They're going to need something from him. He's going to have to make some of those shots over the Syracuse zone.
That being said, I'm not convinced we've seen Ohio State's best basketball. I mean, we saw Really, I mean, of all the wild games last night, the Ohio State-Cincinnati might have been the wildest, where the two teams played even for the first 10 minutes of the ball game. The second 10 minutes, all of a sudden, Ohio State can't miss. They run out to that 12-point halftime lead. The next 8 minutes or so, all of a sudden, it's Cincinnati that can't miss a shot, nailing everything, taking, what, a 3-4-point lead going into that 12-minute timeout. In the last 12 minutes of that ballgame, Ohio State just turns on the Jets, once again goes on that 15-1 run, retakes control of the game, and then puts it away late. But the fact that the Buckeyes allowed that Bearcats run last night, I think it maybe takes the betting markets not respecting Ohio State as much as I thought they would. We talk about what happened in their non-cover against Gonzaga before they got here. Again, something that takes some of the steam out of the betting market. So we've seen the money come to Ohio State this morning. A little bit disappointing for me. I would have loved to lay two with the Buckeyes. At three, you know, still lean in that direction simply because what Syracuse does best on the defensive end of the floor works right in Ohio State's hands. What does Syracuse do defensively? They get out on the wing and stop three-pointers. Well, you know, a good three-point shooting team. A team that gets hot, as we saw Wisconsin do last night, they're still going to hit some shots. The other thing Syracuse do, the ball pressure. Number 5 in the nation in steals. Problem is, Ohio State handles the ball really well. They do not turn the ball over. So not sure how many easy buckets Syracuse is going to get in transition in this one. And if it's two teams in a grinded-out half-court affair, Ohio State may well have the edge.
Now let's go to the eye chart. And talk about some of the specifics behind it. If you only saw the box scores and didn't watch the games played last night between Louisville and Florida, yeah, they look kind of similar. But if you saw those games, you saw something entirely different. So what do we do when we see something? We want to test our perception. Were we right? So we go back and we look it up. Here's why we went to look it up. Talk about the floor game element of basketball. Louisville's defense took Michigan State completely out of what they wanted to do. Louisville won the floor game. You added up, they had 6 more field goal attempts, 1 fewer free throw attempt. You're going to win with that. You get a +6 and only a -1 over there, you're going to win. But now let's move on and look at Florida against Marquette. Florida had fewer rebounds. Florida had more turnovers in that game. Add it all up, Marquette, 6 more field goal attempts and 3 more free throw attempts. Marquette's supposed to win that game. We saw Louisville make stops on Michigan State. What are we seeing from Florida? We're seeing Marquette, to our eyes, stop themselves. We saw them missing what seemed like a lot of open shots. So before we get into play, we want to test that. Let's do a couple of things. First, let's start with, how did Michigan State perceive that Louisville defense? Let's go to Draymond Green, one of the best players in the country, and he's specifically talking about Georgie Dang, the interior difference maker for that Louisville defense. Coming from Green, he was very disruptive. We're not going to back down from anyone. So we took it at him, and he came up with a lot of great blocks. He was the anchor. This is Draymond Green saying, you know what? Those guys were tough. Those guys were real, real tough. Tom Izzo saying the same thing. They beat us. That's what we saw. We saw Louisville beat them. We didn't see Florida beat Marquette, so we want to find out, what did the Marquette players think about that game?
Well, we've got some good quotes to look at, but before I get to that, we have to talk about the eye test. Michigan State is a tough team. They don't back down from anybody. Tom Izzo, a coach with a proven track record in the month of March, as good as any coach in the country. And what happened in the second half against Louisville last night? Spartans were beat down. Spartans were soft. Spartans were hearing Jang in the background, missing layups because they felt his presence around the court. Spartans were turning it over. Spartans got rattled. Louisville's defensive pressure rattled a team that doesn't get rattled. That was impressive to me. Now, cashed a ticket with Florida last night. I'm not going to give the money back, but let's hear some of the quotes from the Marquette side that talk about how the difference, perhaps, not in the box score, but on the floor between how these games played out. Hey, here are the quotes from Marquette. This is from Jay Crowder, the Big East Player of the Year. Quote, we just weren't knocking down shots. Jameel Wilson, nothing would fall for us as a team. I had a couple that rattled in and out. just one of those days. Crowder probably had about five of those that rattled in and out and didn't go down. But look at Todd Mayo. Quote, we just couldn't make any shots. Not to dismiss Florida's defense in that ballgame, because the Gators clearly did something right on the defensive end of the court. But there was a significant difference between the way that Louisville dominated Michigan State defensively and what Florida was able to do against Marquette. And that's certainly something that's not really reflected in this point spread, Dave. And we've got numbers to back this up, don't we?
Yeah, this is one of the times I wish we could go back and break down a lot of video of these games and show you in a lot of different ways what happened last night. Watch the shots Wisconsin made and how well they were defended. Watch the shots Marquette missed and how open they were. You've got Wisconsin making tougher shots than Marquette was missing. Again, that's the eye test. But here's what we also saw as a part of that. We know the Louisville defense. We know the Florida defense. They've been out there all season. What did we see last night? We saw who and what they are. For the full season, field goal percentage defense, Louisville, number two in the nation. Florida, number 128. Three-point percentage defense, Louisville, number 18. Florida, 166. Block shots, Louisville, 28. Florida, 158. And in steals, Louisville, number 7 in the country. Florida, 180. That is a big, big gap in defense, which begs the question, why is Florida the lower-seeded team, the one out there laying the 1.5? Have they made a mistake?
Yes. I mean, the answer, yes. And the funny thing is about the Florida-Marquette game last night. There was a lot of thought process coming in. Oh, Florida's playing great. If you look at the spots for Florida so far in this tournament, they get a Virginia team that basically tanked down the stretch. They get a Norfolk State team that had no business being there in the first place. Well, they played a great game, so I shouldn't say they had no business, but a Norfolk State team that was severely outclassed. And they got a Marquette team that missed shots. You know, bottom line, Gators are the overvalued commodity here. Play of the daytime for the Elite Eight? Yeah. We're going to take Louisville plus 1.5 against the Florida Gators. Louisville plus the point and the hook. That's the Vegas Sports Day play of the day. That's going to wrap it up for the Friday edition. Thank you for spending time out of your busy day with us. Is that the way to say it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You can say it that way. And Baseball Monday.
Baseball Monday.
Baseball Monday.
For Malinsky, I'm Sabrina. Enjoy the game.